The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Gospel of Grace podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. We would love to have you worship with us in person sometime. The church address is 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m.
When we paused the sermon yesterday, we were continuing to examine the prayer/sermon of Nehemiah chapter 9. We are looking at the content of this prayer sermon, which traces the history of the nation of Israel from their formation up until the present time of Nehemiah. We were in the middle of learning about God's formation of the nation, and today we will continue learning about His goodness to them throughout their history. And once again, we will learn how Israel continually forsook God, yet He chastened them in love and took them back when they repented. Join us as we continue to see the goodness of God to His people.
We
I can't imagine that sight. I don't know what I'd have done if I'd have been an Egyptian soldier. I know I'd have been scared to death. I know that. to see these Israelites, that's right, to see these Israelites going across. And I don't know what all, I mean, can you imagine? It said the water stood up like a wall on each side. I've been to the Georgia Aquarium. And I've been walking through there, and there's a place where you can walk down under this big tank that has sharks in it, and you look up and you see these sharks here and these other fish there, and can you imagine walking down through there and looking over here and seeing a big tuna fish or a big shark even. I don't know what all kind of fish were in those waters of the Red Sea, but that's how I imagine it would be and how terrifying it would be to be walking down through there. I noticed Pharaoh didn't go himself.
But his armies were destroyed. God closed it up on them. We're told, he said, their persecutors thou threwest into the deeps as a stone into the mighty waters. That was the same army that the Israelites were terrified of. Beloved, they came face to face. They left Egypt. They came there to the shores of the Red Sea, and the sea was in front of them, and they couldn't go forward. And the armies of the Egyptians were behind them, and they were terrified of them. And they began to wail, and they began to murmur, "Why have you brought us out here just to kill us? Why have you brought us out here, Moses? Oh, it's going to be terrible." And they were terrified of that army. And you know what God saw when he saw that army? He saw a rock that he could skip across the Red Sea. That's all it was. He said, "You threw them into the deeps as a stone into the mighty waters." That's all that army was. Oh, what a lesson for us. I come up against mighty armies sometimes, it seems like. Giants in my way. Troubles in my life. They seem like a flood coming in upon me. And they don't look like a stone that I can cast into the sea, but to my God, that's all they are. Praise God. When I read the history, his story, of the Israelites, I'm encouraged because I see what God can do. See, he destroyed their persecutors. He heard their cries. And then it says in verses 12 through 15 that we've read, it tells us about how he led them through the wilderness back to Canaan. And look at what it said. It says, of course, in verse 13, he gave them the law. And by the way, I sometimes get to thinking about that bad old law, that terrible old law. It wasn't the bad old law. It's bad old me. See, notice what it says about the law. He said he spake with them from heaven and gave them right judgments and true law. Good statutes and commandments. Paul tells us in the 7th chapter over there that it's not the law's fault. The law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. If we could keep the law, that would be good for us. It would be much better for us if we could just keep the law, because these are good statutes. They're not statutes designed to keep us from things that are good for us. He wasn't some mean old God that said, "Well, I just arbitrarily, I don't want you and Eve, Adam, to eat of that fruit of that tree. It's really good. It's really good for you, but that's my arbitrary, mean rule that I'm just putting in place because I want to." That's not what he did. First of all, that wasn't the law. The law wasn't that he gave them that one law. It was just, he said, "You eat of everything I got down here." I don't know what kind of trees they were. I'm going to use what we would think. You know, it's almost as if you can think of it this way. Here's a whole orange grove over here. Man, that's the best oranges you'll ever have, Adam. There's a bunch of pears over here. You're not going to get a sour one. All these apples over here, man, they're just, every one of them are just right, and they'll fill you up. And go pull you a corn ear over here and some okra over there. Everything that you've got here, and I don't know if all those things were in the garden. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But whatever it was glorious. And it was filling, and it was edifying, and it was perfect for them. They had no need. It was a perfect nourishment and nutrition for them. They had no need for a nutritionist in the Garden of Eden. They could just eat everything. But there's just one that you're not to eat of. And that's the tree that bears the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. And the day you eat it, Adam, you'll die. But you know, it's as if God's saying, "Why are you even worried about that? Look at all the bounty I've given you, you see." Well, the devil came along and said, "Has God told you you can't eat of this tree? You can't eat of every tree?" Well, at least Eve got that part right. She said, "No, he said we can eat of every tree. Except this one." And that's the way the rule went. That's the way the law went. But he said, "In the day you eat thereof, God knows that you'll be as gods, knowing good from evil." And we mentioned that this morning in the sermon. That was true, but it was only half true. And the devil only deals in half truths and lies. What he didn't tell them is that they would lose the ability to do the good and to serve God. They knew good from evil as soon as they ate. That was true. But the whole truth was that in the day you eat thereof, you will die. And that's what happened to them. But notice here, he gave them the law, and it was a good thing. And then it says in verse 15, he gave them bread from heaven for their hunger. Bread from heaven. He led them through the wilderness back to Canaan and even gave them bread from heaven. You go over to Psalm 78 sometime, and it reads over there, I forget what verse, but it says, man did eat angels' food. Angels' food. He gave them his bread, this perfect, his nourishing, amazing bread. This, in fact, the word manna, they didn't know what it was. And that's what manna means. Mana, ma in Hebrew is what, and na, it. And it's manna, what is it? That's what they named it. What is it? You know, I think of our term doohickey, you know, when we think of that. Well, you know, what's a doohickey? Well, I mean, a doohickey can be a lot of things, you know. We don't know, it's something we don't know what it is, though, at its base meaning. Well, this was their doohickey. This was manna, okay? What was it? What it was angels' food. It was divine nourishment. He gave them his divine nourishment. He gave them his perfect and holy law. So I guess at this point, Israel is perfectly satisfied, and they're so thankful to God for his sustenance that there's no problem among the Israelites in praising God. Is that right? Well, okay. Verse 16, but, oh my, but they and our fathers dealt proudly and hardened their necks and hearkened not to thy commandments and refused to obey, neither were mindful of thy wonders that thou didst among them, but hardened their necks and in their rebellion appointed a captain to return to their bondage. You know, here we see that what the Israelites did is, instead of being thankful to God, instead of embracing the beauty and the bounty that God had given them, they began to be rebellious. And he goes on to say, you skip down to verse 18, yea, when they had made them a molten calf and said, this is thy God that brought thee up out of Egypt and had wrought many great provocations. So look at what Israel's done. How did they respond? They didn't respond very well, did they? They dealt proudly. They hardened their necks, which means they were stubborn. They hearkened not to the commandments. They refused to obey. And it led to worse conduct. They appointed a leader to take them back to Egypt. You go back sometime to Numbers chapter 14 and you'll read about that. You go back to the book of Exodus, you'll see that they made and worshiped an idol while God was in the very act of giving them his perfect law. But you see, even though they had seen all the signs and wonders that God had wrought in their hearts, they were still living in Egypt. How many times in their wilderness journey did they say, oh, would that we had died in Egypt. Would that we had, let's just go back to Egypt. You know, they kept their hearts back in that land that had been such a bondage to them. You know, how easily and quickly we forget, right? It was their cries, their groaning that went up before God that caused God to come down and deliver them. And yet, all off and on throughout the whole journey, they would say, oh, I just wish we could go back to Egypt. We might have had to work, but at least we had food there. At least we had it better there than we do here. Isn't that our problem sometimes? Don't we live with one foot in Egypt and one foot in Canaan? I'm sorry to say that's my struggle often. Egypt's always, in the scripture, it's a type of the world. It's a type of the wicked world, okay? You know, even though God, you say, oh, I wouldn't do that, but listen, do we sometimes not just want to go back to the things of the world? Do we sometimes not just lapse in our faith, get slack in our study, get lost out in the world's way of thinking and forget about even the church sometimes? Even though God has parted the Red Sea of our hearts and regenerated us? Oh, do we not often, too often, keep one foot in Egypt? Again, you go back to Psalm 78 sometime, and you'll see a good recap of all the disobedience of Israel. And I'll tell you a little secret. The history of the nation of Israel sounds a whole lot like the history of my life here in this world. And by the way, that's what we're told over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. These things were our examples that we should not lust after evil things as they lusted, you see. They're written for our admonition. So as we move on, let's keep going here. We're about to close this, bring this to a close. Notice what it said. He continued to lead them. Verse 19, "Yet thou in thy manifold mercies forsookest them not in the wilderness. The pillar of the cloud departed not from them by day to lead them in the way, neither the pillar of fire by night to show them light in the way wherein they should go. Thou gavest also thy good spirit to instruct them, and withheldest not thy manna from their mouth, and gavest them water for their thirst. Yea, 40 years didst thou sustain them in the wilderness, so that they lacked nothing. Their clothes waxed not old, their feet swelled not. Moreover, thou gavest them kingdoms and nations, and didst divide them into corners. And so they possessed the land of Sihon, and the land of the king of Heshbon, and the land of Og, the king of Bashan. Their children also multiplied as the stars of the heaven, and broughtest them into the land concerning which thou hadst promised to their fathers that they should go in to possess it. So the children went in and possessed the land, and thou subduest them before them, the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, and gavest them into their hands with their kings and the people of the land, that they might do with them as they would. And they took strong cities and a fat land, and possessed houses full of all goods, wells digged, vineyards and olive yards, and fruit trees in abundance. So they did eat and were filled and became fat and delighted themselves in thy great goodness." Now notice what he's done here. This 40 years now, this is Israel's discipline. God's chastening them, but God still didn't forsake them. I want to remind you, child of God, that the chastening of God is a mercy. And that's one of the reasons, that's one of the proofs that you're a child of God, if God is chastening you, okay? And I know from time to time God is chasing me. There's some things that happen to us are just the bad things that happen in this world, because we live in a sin-cursed world. I'll tell you this, if you have any spiritual sense about you at all and try to seek unto the Lord as to why something's occurring in your life, He'll tell you if it's chastening. I never chastened my children without telling them why. I never spanked them without them understanding why I did it. I told them, God is a better father than me. He'll tell you why. You know, I've heard people say, well, I don't know what I've done that God has brought this upon me. Well, if you don't know and can't figure it out, it's probably not God that brought it upon you, okay? He's a better father, as I said, than we are. But I'll tell you this, the times that He has chastened me have been a mercy. There's been times I could tell you about. I don't have time, and I'm not up here to preach my experiences anyway, but I'll tell you, there's been a few times in my life that I can point to where God chastened me, and it was a mercy. It brought me back to a place I needed to be. It brought me here to this church, for one thing. Beloved, God's chastening is a mercy. He does not forsake us in the midst of chastening, you see. He continued to guide us, guide them. He taught them in the wilderness. We're told that He taught them. He said, "Thou gavest thy good spirit to instruct them," in verse 20. He continued to feed them with food and water. He gave manna to them and water for their thirst, beloved. We're told that He gave them water out of the rock back in verse 15. Go back and read about it sometime in Exodus chapter 17 and Numbers chapter 20. Beloved, over there, He gave them the bread of heaven, again, that manna. And He sustained them. I love verse 21. It says, 40 years didst thou sustain them. They lacked nothing. Their clothes waxed not old and their feet swelled not. You know, I've got one pair of pants that I think I've had for 20 or 25 years. And I can still wear them. Which tells you how long it's been since I've been a skinny man. But that one pair of pants has lasted that long. And I'm dreading the day when they wear out. But most clothes I got don't last that long. I'm hard on clothes. And I'll tell you, I'm not going through a wilderness. I'm not going out in the wilderness. And yet, we're told that their clothes didn't get old, they didn't wear out, their feet swelled not. And then it says in verse 22, he delivered them through the wilderness. He was with them, leading them in the wilderness, and he delivered them through the wilderness and ultimately brought them into the promised land and gave them victory over all their enemies. He promised to multiply his people, and he kept that promise. He promised to give them a good land, and he kept that promise under the leadership of Joshua. Israel began to conquer Canaan, and they claimed all of its wealth. And notice, there were wells that they dig not, that they took over. There were vineyards that they planted not, that they reaped from. God gave them victory in all of the land. God keeps his promises, does he not? He keeps his promises. But notice this. It says the Jews were short-sighted. They forgot the promises, and they forsook the Lord. You know, in the wilderness, as we've already said, they were always wanting to go back to Egypt. In Canaan, they were always wanting to mix with the pagans. I've heard it said this way, that Israel was a people who lived beneath their privileges. And that led to a constant history of them being chastened. Does that not sound a little bit like us? Notice in verse 25, it says, they took strong cities and a fat land, okay? And it says that Israel became fat, okay? Now, fat in that day, that just meant prosperous land, something that was prosperous. And the people there who took over this prosperous land became a prosperous people, okay? But look at the end of verse 25. It says, they became fat and delighted themselves in thy great goodness. Remember, this is a prayer to God. This is a sermon addressing God. And he's talking about God's great goodness. It says, they delighted themselves in thy great goodness. And so we find God's chastening coming upon them because they did not delight themselves in the Lord, but they delighted themselves in what the Lord was given them. It reminds me of a time over there in, I believe it's the fourth chapter of the book of 1 Samuel, where Eli's sons were being very corrupt and very godless, wicked, and they were beginning to lose. They lost a battle. And then the children of Israel, the armies there said, hey, let's go get the Ark of the Covenant and take it with us that it might save us. You know, in the past, in years past, when they had the Ark of the Covenant with them, they were victorious because they understood that the Ark only represented God. It was not God. It was God doing the delivering, not the Ark. But they had gotten their focus off of God himself and onto that which God had given them. And this nation here of Israel had become afflicted by prosperity. Afflicted by prosperity. I read a quote by a Scottish historian and philosopher from the 1800s named Thomas Carlyle. And he said this. He said, for every 100 men who can stand adversity, there is only one who can stand prosperity. John Steinbeck made this statement. He said, if you want to destroy a nation, give it too much. Make it greedy, miserable, and sick. Remember the prodigal son? Over in Luke chapter 15, he wanted his father's wealth, but he didn't want to do his father's will. He didn't want to have anything to do with his father's will, you see. You go over to read about the Laodicean church. In fact, let me just turn there for a moment over in Revelation chapter 3. This is a church that from all outward appearances is doing well. But in verse 14, it says, the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. Verse 15, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then that because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. God's going to vomit them out of his mouth. Look at verse 17. Because thou sayest, I am rich and increase with goods and have need of nothing. They were a prosperous church. Their coffers were full. Their pews were not empty. They were filled up. But they said, we're doing great. We're just doing good. We can sit back and relax. He said, I'm rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. That's the condition they were in. The prosperity that these children of God, the children of Israel, were experiencing over there led them, instead of being rich, to being miserable and poor and blind and naked. Now, as we close out, doesn't it sound like the nation of Israel, or doesn't the nation of Israel sound a lot like us? A lot like the times in which we live. You go back to Joshua and Judges, and you'll see it's a continuing history of the children of Israel being delivered from problems and then getting relaxed and rebelling and having to be restored again just over and over and over. Does that sound familiar? It sounded familiar to Paul. You'll read Romans chapter 7 sometime. In Romans chapter 7, he said, I struggle. I try to do right, but what I try to do, I don't ever get it done. When I would do good, the evil is present with me. But remember what I said earlier. The chastening of God is a mercy. Go read Hebrews sometime, chapter 12. We won't turn there tonight. We've been through the book of Hebrews. But read in chapter 12 of Hebrews, beginning there in about verse 5 sometime. The chastening of God is a sign that we are one of His children. And beloved, God loves us too much to allow us to become spoiled by the wickedness of this world. Blessed is the man whom thou chastenest, O Lord, and teachest him out of thy law, according to the psalmist. I want to read you another quote as we bring this to a close about this history of Israel and how it's so like our lives every day. I've always said that the history of Israel is sort of a precursor or a foreshadowing of each individual child of God's life, how we are delivered from something, and then we get lax, and we relax too much, and we end up rebelling, and God chastens us and brings us back. Warren Wiersbe, who wrote a commentary on the Bible, said this, against the dark background of Israel's unfaithfulness shines the bright light of the faithfulness of God. When Israel obeyed him, he was faithful to bless. When they disobeyed him, he was faithful to chasten. When they asked for mercy, he was faithful to forgive. God is willing to give his people many privileges, but he will not give them the privilege of sinning and having their own way. And you know the story here. Ultimately, he brought the Assyrians and then the Babylonians upon Israel for a more complete chastening. And that's why we are where we are today. So, final thoughts tonight. First of all, God never forsakes his people. Even his chastisement is a mercy. And as we close out here, you'll see that God, and we're going to read about it here beginning in verse 26. Notice that they became fat and delighted themselves in God's goodness, but not in God himself. Notice verse 26, nevertheless, they were disobedient and rebelled against thee and cast thy law behind their backs and slew thy prophets, which testified against them to turn them to thee. And they wrought great provocations. Therefore, thou didst deliver them into the hand of their enemies who vexed them. And in the time of their trouble, when they cried unto thee, thou heardest them from heaven. And according to thy manifold mercies, thou gavest them saviors who saved them out of the hand of their enemies. This is the book of Judges. But after they had rest, they did evil again before thee. Therefore leftest thou them in the hand of their enemies, so that they had the dominion over them. Yet when they returned and cried unto thee, thou heardest them from heaven, and many times didst thou deliver them according to thy mercies, and testifiedst against them that thou mightest bring them again unto thy law. Yet they dealt proudly, and hearkened not unto thy commandments, but sinned against thy judgments, which if a man shall do, he shall live in them. And withdrew the shoulder, and hardened their neck, and would not hear. Yet many years didst thou forbear them, and testifiest against them by thy spirit and thy prophets, yet would they not give ear. Therefore gavest thou them into the hand of the people of the lands. That's what we've just talked about. Over and over, back and forth, constantly, okay? But I want us to leave here not thinking about all the ways that God's people fail him. But verse 31 teaches us about how faithful God is to his people. Nevertheless, for thy great mercy's sake, thou didst not utterly consume them, nor forsake them, for thou art a gracious and merciful God. You know, this is what sustained Jeremiah in the midst of his weeping. If you go back to the book of Lamentations sometime, you read over there in the third chapter, he said, "This I recall of mine." And he's just been talking about all the terrible things that have happened. And he's weeping. He's called the weeping prophet. He had a ministry I hope I never have. I'm so thankful I don't have. He had a weeping ministry. And he said, "This I recall to mind, therefore have I hope. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness." See, that's the God we serve. Now listen, I'm not standing here tonight telling you it's okay to forsake him. I'm not standing here telling you that rebelling and falling away is a good thing. It's a terrible thing. We ought not find ourselves in that position. And we ought to struggle and strive every day against that. But we serve a God that even when we do, his faithfulness doesn't fail. He continues to love us, and he chastens us, and he will continue to do so until we are called home to glory or until he comes back. I'm so thankful for the faithfulness of this God of Israel that we read about in his story. I thank you for your kind attention tonight.
Thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow when we'll present another message of God's sovereign grace. In the meantime, if you have any questions or would like to contact us, please go to the website at zionpbc.com, where you can subscribe and get email updates every time a new sermon or any announcements are posted. Also, you can contact me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter jchrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast, and may the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.